When it comes to sustaining a music career, your music career, is social media dead? Is it dying or is it thriving? We're going to talk about all of that on this episode, so let's get to it.
You're listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 288 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you doing?
I'm great. The other day, I bought 270 million Bitcoin.
You did not.
I did, and here's why this is true. Bitcoin is the ticker, the official ticker of a coin that's actually called Harry Potter Obama Sonic Coin. Because Bitcoin is BTC.
I'm so confused. I have no idea what this is.
No, I'm sort of being silly, but I actually did buy this total junk cryptocurrency that is named after Obama and Harry Potter and Sonic the Hedgehog, and it's officially called Bitcoin.
Okay. You're gonna have to. I'm gonna need like a diagram and a storyboard to understand what you're talking about here. So.
All right. Well, we can leave that topic then and talk about music.
All right. Yeah. Lots going on. It's a new year. How you feel? We've had a couple podcasts since New Year, but we're starting to settle into it a little bit more. How you feeling?
Pretty good. I like this new. For people who are just listening to the podcast, we're doing video too, so you know it takes a little getting used to us actually seeing each other.
Yeah,
that's nice.
I can see you. Normally, I'm just staring at a wall when we record these.
Yeah, I've got big plans for my music. A lot of it involves things around social media, which I know is the topic today.
Yes.
Mostly how I can migrate people off of various platforms to a consolidated...
We've always talked about that. That is important. That is important. And that's partly some of the reasons we're going to be talking about social media. Is social media dead? That's what we're going to be talking about. Or is social media dead for musicians or your music career? Whatever you want to call it, that's what we'll be talking about today. Hey, you mentioned that we're doing this on video now, but there's also people that, you know, still listening to it the traditional podcast way. Just want to let you know, hit that subscribe button, whether it's on YouTube, whether it's on your podcast app, or if it's on Spotify, make sure you hit that subscribe button. We are doing episodes almost weekly now. Chris, huge upgrade. People used
almost.
To have to wait.
Yeah, no, we are doing them weekly.
Well, we're gonna have some off weeks here and there, but yes, weekly. So hit that subscribe button, make sure you're subscribed so you don't miss an episode. And while we're doing public service announcements, I want to remind you that it's a new year. It's time to get some new music out there. It's the perfect time to drop a single, reinvigorate your fan base, get them going, engaged after the holiday malaise of overeating and overdrinking, and get a song out. Go to cdbaby.com, sign one up, get it out to the world. We'll monetize it everywhere, and you'll be so happy you did.
Yeah, and if you've got a love song ready for Valentine's Day, the time
to
distribute that is now. Get it in the works. Get it out there so it's ready for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like holidays like that are great ways to, you know, drop something new and engage fans around, but you can't be thinking about it on February 13th.
Yeah.
You have to do it now. So
let's be real, though. We're all musicians. They're all going to think of it on February 13th.
Well, think about it February 12th or the 10th. The 10th. Actually, the 7th, because then you can use Spotify's pitching tool. So start thinking about that stuff now. Drop a cover song. It's an easy way to engage with your fans. So, yes, cdbaby.com. Just head on there now. Create an account. It's free. All right. So what are we talking about, Chris? Social media dead? Is it dying? We just really wanted to pose the question. We're not saying it's dead. Obviously, people are having success with social media. But in general, there's this feeling that happens after a while of like, why am I doing this? What is the point of this? Is this unsustainable long term? What are the trade-offs that I'm having as a musician because I'm spending so much time on social media. So that's kind of what I was feeling. I posed the idea to you of like, let's just pose the question and see how our artists that listen to the podcast are feeling and what their thoughts are. Are you super excited about it? Are you like, not more crap that I have to do on yet another platform that I don't care about?
Or do you flip-flop between those two extremes every other day?
that's possible as well.
That's me, yes. For sure.
So, so we wanted to talk about that. So, Chris, you were going to kind of set some of the discussion, like, where did this even come from? And especially the our perspective, having been making music and promoting music for quite some time.
Yeah.
Just our perspective. Go ahead.
I mean, I think we'll definitely get into the pros and cons of social later in more detail. We'll talk through five of its main problems. But just as like a brief history, you know, like you and I are not spring chickens anymore. Both of us started playing music long before there was anything called social media.
I can still pass as somebody in their 30s. I can still do that.
Well, you know, we even remember a fairly sizable chunk of our life before the internet was widely available. So
that's true.
Yeah. So like we remember a time where all you needed was something called a website and an email list. And then suddenly there was this thing called MySpace, and we watched the rise of MySpace as a place where, you know, we could network and find similar artists and build a little scene, book tours and stuff. You know, it was a super useful tool, and then it did its slow, sad creep towards oblivion. Facebook took over. It, you know, promised us the world. We could access everyone for free, and we fed it all of our thoughts and pictures and videos and everything. And then they were like, oh, wait, actually, we're an ad platform.
Yeah, and you're the product.
You're the product. We're going to throttle your reach now, and you'll have to pay more and more to reach the people that you got accustomed to reaching for free. So then, you know, at around that same time, like YouTube was this growing strange archive of just weird and wonderful user-generated content. And then that slowly shifted towards being more like kind of like a cable TV network, but with just really short programs. Mm-hmm. And they became very specific in what they required of you as a content creator or as a musician in order to be successful. And then on and on and on. You know, it's like slowly over a decade or more, like we watched everyone's attention spans just get scattered between Twitter and Vine and Twitch and TikTok and, you know, like 20 other social platforms. And I think it's left us, probably people of my age, like seeing the long arc of this as turning us into, quote, content creators when we really just wanted to be musicians. And now we've been conditioned to seek engagement, likes and comments and views of content that we wanted to create to get people interested in our music. But now we're just on this weird, like hamster wheel treadmill thing that we can't get off. Otherwise we're going to like lose our connection to the only people out there who care about our music. And that's where I'm at. Like, are we just on a wheel with no end that we're spinning for someone else's gain without it really having the amount of energy we're putting out? It would be nice to feel like it was coming back 100% towards our music. And I don't think that's true.
Yeah. Well, and also, you know, when we were, everything you said, absolutely 100%. But also beyond that, it's like, how much of my time am I working on my craft as an artist, as a musician, compared to working on my craft as a Facebook user, which, let's be honest, there's a lot of time wasting going on. And we've got our five problems that we'll highlight coming up. But I've got some stats to share.
Ooh, stats.
Social media usage has sort of flatlined in the United States. And I think a lot of the Western world, there's platforms that are still growing, exploding in other territories, except for TikTok is absolutely growing in the U.S., and we're talking about general usage. We're not, these stats aren't like pertaining to music and the music segment. So that's one thing that's to note with these stats. But, you know, you mentioned Facebook. Americans 12 to 34 years old, Facebook usage has declined from 79% in 2017 to 57% today. So it's dying. That's pretty substantial decline in usage in that user group. The only user group that Facebook is growing is
55 and up, right?
The plus 55.
I saw that. Yeah. They're finally getting on board after 15 years or whatever.
It's yeah. Been. It's like, maybe I should reconnect with those people from high school. That's what, you know, that's what Facebook like exploded from, you know, people going, oh, I want to reconnect with those people from high school. Snapchat decreased from 62% to 55% usage.
Little dip.
And Twitter is down. LinkedIn and Pinterest are down. Instagram was still the one, besides TikTok, still the one platform that was growing with younger demographics. But I, that stat's not on here. It was in the article I was referencing. But I believe the growth has declined. It's still growing, but not as quickly as it was.
Yeah, and some of those stats I saw, like a conclusion was basically that no one should expect growth in the United States in the near term for social media overall.
Yeah, that was sort of the punchline of it. And a lot of it was also, I saw a comment about this, like, did TikTok reach its peak in 2021? Has it peaked? To be determined.
Well, another thing, when you said the year, that reminded me of something I found surprising about these sort of plateauing statistics is that this came during what was still a very active pandemic. And like, we're still social distancing. We're still, you know, staying home more than we were. We're still, you know, at home because we're working from home. So by and large, you would think that this is a time where social media usage would go up and keep going up because of changes in society, but it's not.
Well, and that's partly what I was feeling when I started talking to you. Hey, should we do an episode about this? Let's take the temperature of our artist community. What are they feeling? So I'll throw that out there. We want to hear from you. What are you feeling about social media? Call our listener line 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. But you know, through all of this, I was feeling like I'm just tired of looking at this garbage. It's a waste of time. And also, I feel like a lot of it is what I mentioned, in, I think, in the last episode, where it feels like people just staring in the mirror at themselves. Mm-hmm. Like, I start looking at it going, I don't understand why this person feels the need to show me them walking to their car, to them drinking a Starbucks, to them then doing the next thing and the next thing. It's like, it's not interesting.
Look, I'm alive. I'm still alive. But then, still alive.
But then the other, yeah, okay, thanks for checking in. We were worried. But the flip side of it is, have we lost the ability to experience real life? That we're walking around with this camera in front of us, missing the whole world passing by. And we're so busy trying to show people that we have value, that we're cool, that we do things. And you're not even actually experiencing the things that you're trying to show people you're doing. You're too busy with your phone.
Yeah, well, that makes me think of this somewhat interesting, somewhat ridiculous discussion that I sometimes pay attention to about whether online engagement, online identity, online community is real life. Like, it's so a massive part of our life that maybe it's no longer healthy to say there's the fake world and then the real world, and the real world is the physical one. You know, like, there's this weird meshing of the two, but I'm old enough to be like, get off my lawn. This isn't real. I mean, it's important. I have real connections. You know, I'm online most of the day. So, but I still want to favor the primacy of the actual physical world. And I think we are losing an ability to focus and calm down and connect in that old fashioned way.
And part of the thing that got me curious about this was not just about maybe how I'm feeling, because, you know, there's a lot of things I don't feel great about right now in the world. So and also, we have seen over the course of the pandemic and especially over like the past election cycle here in the United States, a lot of, oh, this is allowed, but this isn't allowed. This is allowed, but that's not allowed. And to the point where, you know, I you know, was thinking about how in some of the music promotion stuff you were doing, you had posts that were removed because it was political in nature. And it's like, come on, the internet was supposed to be about the amazingness that you see in the world and the diversity you see when you stop putting gatekeepers in front of everything and the free exchange of ideas, and seeing a clamp down on that of like feeling like we really are the product here.
Yeah.
The shine is off of this. But beyond all that, what's interesting to me is I have two daughters, one that's 15 and one that's almost 12, and how they start viewing the activities that parents do. And people my age are very much on their phones a lot, on social media a lot, and that's become a part of life. And they're looking at that going, I don't want to be like you. You're on your phone way too much. And I've been hearing that from their friends and stuff. We're never going to be on phones all day. And kind of that reaction against how your parents go about life.
What are they on? Their iPads playing Roblox with each other?
My daughters actually read books.
Wow. No, mine does too.
Yeah, my oldest read 200 books last year.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, she can judge you then.
Yeah.
She's got
they have iPads and they use them, but it's like, it's not such a critical piece of like, oh, I must understand what's happening online or in the world. It's like their world is different. And so to me, I'm like, okay, every generation has their thing. Is this just the thing of the Gen Xers, millennials, that the future generations will be like, those idiots? But probably not. It's not going away. And for a lot of our artists, it's an amazing tool. But the other thing that we were thinking about this was, I've watched artists, instead of write, record, release music, spend so much time chasing likes, like specific people that I have in my mind right now, chasing likes and doing the thing that gets that on TikTok and not having a music career, having a TikTok video career that really doesn't do anything. It's, you know, it's not like it's big enough to, you know, be an influencer. But anyway, that's partly what I was looking at going, interesting. What do we really want out of life? What are we looking for? Do we want to be musicians and artists and people that create music that moves people? Or do we want to spend all our time making videos on TikTok where we have two characters of ourselves and changing clothes and doing different camera shots to talk to ourselves on TikTok? That is a very popular thing on TikTok, but is that what I want to be doing with my life?
Leave that to the comedians and the actors. I know.
It can be funny and entertaining, but again, we're talking about musicians. Is this moving your career forward, or is it something else? And unless you have something else to say, you've got that list of five main problems that you were going to run down.
Yeah. So as powerful as social media can be for music and for musicians trying to build their career, there are five huge problems that I keep facing. And I think a lot of us do. One is it can be a massive distraction, and it often has diminishing returns for the effort we put in. Two, platforms and formats are constantly changing. That's really confusing for creators. Three, unless you do it really well, it can be not career building. So why are we doing it? Four, it's terrible for our mental health. Data backs us up, and it's terrible for society in some ways. And lastly, we're putting all this effort into something that may be and probably is impermanent. Those are the five problems. I think we're going to talk through them a lot more in detail starting now.
All right. Yeah. Massive distraction with diminishing returns. This, the diminishing returns, I feel like, is something that is being imposed on us. Whether or not you feel it's a massive distraction, but the diminishing returns, one, there's doom scrolling. It's like you spent an hour or two and you realize, what did I just do? I could have been working on music, but I really just mind-numbingly scrolled through crap for 2 hours that I don't even care about.
Yeah, when you're done, you're like, you feel hollow. It's like eating that whole pint of Ben and Jerry's. You're like, what did I do? I feel sick.
Yeah,
I won't in the morning. I won't even remember what that ice cream tasted like. What are we doing?
Nothing is exciting anymore. You put these notes together. So you said we are the stars of our own movies, but our stories are boring and sad during the pandemic.
Seriously, like, I mean, I know that social media can be a powerful tool when people are trying to share news or, you know, good causes and stuff. And there's a lot of things to be outraged about in the world. But like, sometimes I just go on there and I'm like, everything sucks. I don't need to hear about it. Stop preaching to me. Stop griping. We're all in this same boat. You know, not really. I know we're not all in the same boat, but you know what I mean? It's just depressing.
Yeah. And the other point under this was you mentioned you're putting all this time into not making music.
Both as an observer and a doom scroller and a creator of content. It's like, the quality expectations go up for viewers. They want you to make more and more amazing stuff, in a realm that you didn't sign up. You didn't sign up to be a videographer or a film director or a comedian, but yet the expectations of that kind of quality go up. You're expected to do more and more and more of it to feed these algorithms, blah, 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 blah. And like, God forbid you stop for a second and make an album for 6 months, because then you're going to lose your reach. So yeah, that's that hamster wheel we were talking about.
Yeah. And along with that, the better you do, the more you have to pay to keep the faucet running. And this is where I said the diminishing returns is sort of imposed on us, is that the algorithms, they keep changing them and changing them and changing them. So you have to do more and more and more just to reach the same amount of people. In fact, I was on a marketing blog just a couple of days ago, and they're saying that there's rumors of Facebook pushing a new update to the algorithm that will make your page have even less reach, your posts. So if you have a band page, which you have to have in order to have, you know, the kind of tools and things you need for a business, a band, you know, any type of public persona, as opposed to your personal page, which has limits and you can only do so much. But those public pages, they're reducing the reach even more. So it's like, you have to do even more and more and more just to get the same return you did last year or the year before. And a lot of these platforms, when they are new, when you posted something, almost all your followers saw it. Now with Facebook, you know, they'll even tell you this. It's about like 1% of your following will see it. And if they react to it, they'll open it up a little bit more to more people. But they want you to buy. They want you to pay to reach your audience. And it's like, why do I have to pay to reach the people that said they want to hear what I have to say? So that's where I feel like the diminishing return being imposed. And that I really feel this, have felt the stranglehold on music promotion in the last couple of years, and it really impacting. And you know, we have that that interview with Jackie Vinson about Instagram Reels. She pivoted to that, doing live streams, and it exploded for her. But she told me, I can't remember if it was in the interview or if she told me later on, that they changed the algorithm and she could see it in real time happening. And suddenly she was reaching about a fourth of the people she was, and it was not being spread as widely. And it really started to have a very diminished return. And so she felt like she was in on some sort of gold rush, and now that's gone for people.
Yeah, well, and then just to beat a dead horse here, the other thing about the diminishing returns is you're doing more and more work and you're spending more and more money to get the same engagement, in quotes, that you were accustomed to. But even that engagement might be worthless in terms of driving customers of your music or getting email subscribers or, you know, phone numbers or whatever, the ticket sales, anything that actually is a measurable benefit to your music career. Like, the engagement doesn't equal that. So yeah. So we'll talk a little bit more about integrating social media as part of a funnel, but I think that's the solution here.
All right. You said changing formats are confusing for creators. What are some of the points for that?
Well, I don't know. Where do we even begin?
People are probably already sick of us at this point. Either like, yes, preach, or they're like, these guys are losers.
Okay. I get used to writing 140 character tweets. That's my mode for a little while. Then suddenly I can write longer tweets. Okay, cool. Now what's the difference between Twitter and Tumblr when you can write much longer? I mean, yes, is a difference. Now suddenly Twitter is also Clubhouse. They introduce Spaces, this audio thing. Instagram has changed what they prioritize as their featured format, I don't know, 4 or 5 different times. Things keep changing. They keep kind of pulling the rug out from under us in one way. And then the other thing that happens as platforms keep changing is they all seem to be melding into the same thing. Like YouTube now is YouTube plus Instagram plus TikTok. They've got YouTube Shorts. It's like, at some point, can we just, I mean, I don't believe in monopolies, but like, can we just have one thing?
Yeah.
Just have one thing that does everything and stop making us have to, I don't know.
I think I could sum it up in that, like, when Twitter came about, it had its special sauce. And that was, it felt like you could tap into real-time conversations or thoughts and stuff anywhere. And so it was fun being at, like, South by Southwest, using that hashtag, kind of see what other people are doing, what's going on. And it felt like you were a part of a bigger thing. Then they got rid of, you know, real timelines and all that kind of stuff. So it's just scattered information. And Instagram, it was like, oh, it's this cool photo-based thing. But then they want to become a video platform. And then they want to do stories that Snapchat was doing. And it's like, what works on those platforms keeps shifting. So yeah. When, like, Instagram, when it was new, hashtags and just a good photo were a way into getting followers. Now it's like, half the people I see aren't even using the main post feature anymore. It's either stories or something
reels.
And so it keeps shifting, and it's easy for you to be doing something that works and find out suddenly that's not what works on this platform anymore.
Well, I think the other problem that emerges there is as the platforms prioritize a different format, some new format they've introduced, they make their algorithm behave accordingly. So now they, you know, Instagram wants everyone to be making reels. And I get it. They're fun. They're quick. Like, people respond to video. But then the pressure is on the creator to chase what the algorithm favors as opposed to what is truly rewarding for them artistically. Like you said, Instagram used to be a photo site. If there's an amazing photographer who, like, you know, made the concession to create square photos, but they were amazingly shot photos, 10 years later, now they're like, do I have to be a film director? Do I have to shoot, like, stupid, fluff social meme content on video? Like, I'm a photographer. So the answer is no, don't change. Still be the photographer. Maybe Instagram is still your place. Maybe there's a different place. But, like, it sucks that we're under so much pressure to conform to the mode of the day, I guess.
Yeah. And this really started to hit me with TikTok because, what works on TikTok is incredibly time consuming. It's like people have to type in every word they said, you know, that keeps going along with what they said. There's just a lot of things that it's like, especially those videos I saw where it's like people dressed as two different individuals talking to themselves. Like, it can be funny. It can be entertaining. And it can even be useful. But it's a lot of time for, like, why did I just spend all my day for this one post? Is it building my career, or am I just chasing likes and allowing me to be, you know, sucked into being the product for this company?
A lot of, what would it be, about a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, when TikTok kind of really started taking off in the US amongst, you know, not just kids, there were some musicians, some independent level musicians that I've started following and that were doing really creative stuff, and they seem to be building an audience. And I've checked in on a lot of those accounts over the past 6 months, and they've either stopped making stuff or they've literally made posts about being tired and, like, reaching an existential crisis where they're like, I don't know if this TikTok thing is what I should be doing. Like, you guys are watching these videos, but you're not listening to my music, which then just feels sad. It's like, oh, you've just become a slave to this thing now.
What we could probably jump to the next one where you, because we're sort of talking about some of these things that it's not career building. And I'm sure someone's like, absolutely, it's been career building for me. By and large, for the average artist that's an independent artist, when they look, they have finite amount of time, and what they could be doing with their time, they're spending a lot of their time in activities that are not career building. I think that's one thing. You can get more money. That sounds stupid to say, oh, yeah, just go get more money. But you can go do things to create more money for yourself, second job, you know, launch a business, whatever, but you can't get more time and you'll never get time back. You can always go earn more money, but you can't get that time back. And to me, it's like, what are we doing with the limited time we have? Are you going to wake up one day and go, dang, I sure spent a lot of time on this platform that doesn't exist now?
Yeah. Well, and also I think like to say it's not career building is true in most cases for artists. The ones who can, you know, be the exceptions to that rule are doing one of two things. They're creating content that's just so undeniably entertaining that they're building a following that's going to stick around from just their skill. The other is people who have decided to get off the treadmill of social media and use it kind of as an ad platform in a very strategic way. They kind of create a few bits of winning content and they deploy that in a smart way to get people off the platform to actually support their career. And, you know, that doesn't mean they're not putting time and creativity into social. They are. They've just decided they're not going to do that thing of just constantly obsessing and creating things every day and feeding the algorithms and all that stuff. So,
yeah. And I think part of this conversation came from, I was at a conference in Atlanta, the A3C conference back in October. And I was on a panel, someone from TikTok was on that panel. And she said some things I didn't know about the platform that also highlight how these platforms have gone in sort of divergent ways, that what works on one platform, what works on TikTok, could absolutely destroy your presence on Instagram. And they were talking about how The Weeknd, the artist The Weeknd, had just released a song and in that first month posted 150 different videos to support that song. And the punchline from what they're saying is, artist, that's what you should be doing. And, you know, I see artists taking notes and I'm thinking, there is no way I have time or the energy or should be making 150 different videos for that song. Because the thing they didn't say is The Weeknd has millions of dollars of marketing money, has
a giant team
that are doing all this for him. So he is not doing this himself. And the thing that was interesting to me is, you know, since this was being held up as like an example, I went to The Weeknd's profile and follow him now just to see what he's doing. The videos he is making would absolutely not work on that platform if it was not for his fame. Because a lot of them were just snippets of like music videos. And if I did that on TikTok, no one would ever see my posts. So that's also like this thing of like, there are different rules at play here depending on fame and stature.
Yeah. I mean, I think when people try to learn lessons from watching the stars, they forget that context matters. And I follow Billie Eilish and, you know, her Instagram posts get millions and millions of likes and she creates good content, but a lot of times it's just, like a weird angle selfie and she has 5 million likes on it because she's Billie Eilish. If you did the same thing, 3 people would like it. And I think we forget that, like the lessons don't always apply.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's okay. It's just, you have to put it through that filter. And I think that's where some of the frustration, I think independent artists feel when they have these music business talking heads that make it sound so simple. Oh, just make 150 videos in a month for your single and you'll be like The Weeknd. I'll make 150 videos, waste my entire free time I have for an entire month. And they won't do anything because I've tried some of those videos on like TikTok. That's not what people want. And it's interesting to see what some of the famous artists are doing. Coldplay is another one that I follow, and their guitar player has just been like in the studio playing guitar parts for some of their famous songs. And that works great for them. I've tried some of those type of videos and nothing happens. So even using the right hashtags and things, it's like, there's more at play than just, hey, do this thing and it'll work for you.
Yeah. Well, in terms of social not being a great thing for building your career, it's also not a great thing most times for building a story. And so what I mean by that is when we're on that social treadmill, we think of creating these one-off posts or one-off videos. They're these little discrete bits of content, but they don't build into a story, as opposed to managing a community on Discord or even having an email list where your subscribers write back and forth. Like, mm-hmm. that's an actual conversation. That's something that can go long form. It can grow and extend over time and really build a story, which is the thing you need to do in order to build a career. If you're just on the treadmill, you're just gonna be like, what should I post today? What should I post today? So,
yeah. Yeah. I've started laughing when we were talking about it. So like, man, people must think Chris and Kevin really hate social media.
I post things all the time. I'm on the treadmill half the time. I like it.
We're just trying to get a conversation started. You can get us on a soapbox on anything, and wait till you hear our conversation about NFTs. That'll be some fireworks. No, but honestly, it's really been over this last like 6 months to a year of just watching what artists are doing. And one of the other points you have under it's not career building is engagement without sales and fans means nothing. And I think that's the trap a lot of people are falling into. It feels great to get likes and even comments, but are you doing anything to turn that into people that are listening to your music or people that are fans of your music? Some of these platforms are easy to get that like button clicked, but it's really hard to get them to make it about your music. Yeah, it could be, you know, a lot of these platforms, especially TikTok, it seems like you got to have a shtick, which is like this gimmick, this thing that you do. And if you don't keep doing that, it's all over. And then it becomes like, well, what, how long do I have to do this? And how do I do this thing and turn it into fans of my music? And if not, what am I doing?
Yeah. Well, one last thing we have about building your career is that there's this sort of basic economic problem with these things where you're putting a lot of time into making things that you give for free to this platform. Yes, they've built a house that you can throw a party in with your fans, but by and large, you are making content for free that you give to these engines that then use it for profit. They charge you to share it with your fans. They're charging, you know, advertisers in order to reach all the people who are sticking around to view your content. So you could potentially even be losing money while making stuff that you put online. So that I find that very strange too. So at the very least, use it smartly so you are getting a return on your investment.
Yeah, and I put this added this to the one of the other points, but they own your content. They own that video you post on that platform, and you may be thinking, well, no, they don't. I own the copyright. They own that file that you just posted to that platform. They can do with it whatever they want. Read the terms of service. It's scary. It's scary. So. That's something that, you know, also you're putting, like you said, you're creating all this value and you're giving it to them. Now, the idea is that these platforms, we want to create value and interaction with fans, but is that where it's going towards? And ultimately, how do you make good or cash in on that value that you're creating for people on social platforms? I think that's one of the key things I think people are missing. And as these algorithms continue to have a stranglehold on what people see and making people pay to see it. You start to wonder, like, I'm giving Facebook so much great content that then they turn around and put ads on and make money. And then they charge me to reach these people. So, that's kind of the idea of like, wow, you're not capturing all the value for the amount of time and effort you put into it. That's why I think, thinking about this, and this conversation isn't to say get off social media, it's killing you, but maybe you should, maybe it is killing us. But the idea that there are tools out there, like the stuff, I love my band Zoogle website because there are things on there that can create some of these engagement and create this value for fans that then I capitalize on 100%. And so it's like the idea of like, this isn't a treadmill that you just have to be on because everybody says so. It's a tool that's useful, but also you got to understand what your end game is. And if you don't know what your end game is, then maybe you're just wasting your time.
Yeah. Well, you said social media may be killing us. And that is one of our points, is that if you're not in control of it and social media is in control of you, then you potentially are facing some mental health stuff. Like, and I don't say that in a judgy way. I suffer from it as well. Like you said, are we all just like narcissists staring into the river? And like, we just want to be like, oh, I still matter. I'm still here. That's what it feels like when no one is engaging with your stuff. You're kind of posting to prove that you're a thing, that you exist. And then even if people are engaging, it's never enough, because guess who has more likes? Billie Eilish or, you know, whatever. There's this constant comparison. We look around, we're never as cool or glamorous or funny as like a million other people online, because guess what? There's always people smarter than you, always people dumber than you, always people richer than you. Every metric you can do to gauge your own life and success, someone's beating you at it. So you get on this thing where the best of the best are in front of you all day long. You feel like shit. That's not good for your, you know, getting through the day. So, you know, another thing that statistics back up, particularly in teenagers who are very impressionable, it, you know, increases anxiety and depression and whatever else. Like, it's scattering our focus. It can be bad for us if it's driving the car. So that's why another, we got to get a hold of the social media steering wheel.
Yeah, they, this was, I think, back in the summer, someone who worked at Facebook came out with a bunch of data, because Facebook, like we highlighted at the beginning of the episode, has a problem that younger generations are not adopting it, and they're either leaving it or not using it, not even signing up. And that doesn't bode well for their future. And so they were planning some outreach for younger audiences, and they did a bunch of data collection and found out that social media has actually been very damaging for the, you know, like the teen 13 to 18 year olds. And so, you know, it was a big controversy. Like, yeah, I, you know, growing up in the non social media, non internet world, like my elementary, middle school and high school years, it was hard enough, but you got to leave it when you left school.
Yeah, you could return to your own little like imagination domicile of home. And
yeah. Now the bullies follow you everywhere.
Yeah. And your points of comparison follow you everywhere. And I mean, these platforms doing their own research on this stuff, good, as long as they learn the lesson of, you know, not being Joe Camel selling cigarettes to kids. But we're past that. Like, there's serious ethical problems with the amount of, you know, data there is about the destructive aspects of these things, monetizing our impulses, you know, our worst impulses and all this stuff. So I don't know where I'm going with that, except just to rant. This is a rant episode, right?
This is a rant episode. yeah, I mean, go watch The Social Dilemma on Netflix. I mean, I know when that came out, was it in 2020? Or 2019, I know several people at CD Baby deleted all their social media accounts because they're like, yeah, I don't want to be a part of this. It seems fun, but at the end, what am I left with?
Well, I used to scoff at people who did the social media diet or whatever you'd call it, when they'd be like, I'm going to be off for a month. I'm like, oh, whatever. Like, you'll be back in a week, first of all. And why is this so damaging to you that you need to go on a diet or a cleanse or whatever? But now I'm like, oh, I was being the judgy jerk there, because I'm like, it's probably good to have these maybe arbitrary times where you set it aside to prove that you can live without it, and maybe even discover what's worth living for besides whatever is inside our phone. So yeah, I was wrong. Good going, all you people who do the cleanse.
Well, here's the thing. Whenever I see people do that, I laugh, because I'm like, why do you feel the need to announce this? Just don't
just
do
go
it.
Away.
The fact that you need to announce this means that you still have a problem. It's like the person saying, hey, everybody, I'm not going to eat cookies for 2 months. And yeah, you are. You can eat cookies in a week. And the funny thing is that I see people make those announcements and they're back really quick. It's funny. It's like, just disappear. We don't care. we didn't care about what you were posting to begin with. So anyway,
Speaking of disappearing, that's part of our next point, which is that a lot of these platforms will be impermanent. MySpace went away, and not just that people stopped using it, but at some point they actually literally lost like massive parts of their database, I think. So if you go to MySpace, there's a chance like your music won't be there, your pictures won't be there. And that could happen with any of these platforms. So
yeah, this is the sad lesson that we all learned when MySpace became very popular. It was an excellent platform to promote music. It was probably the first platform to really prove out how social platforms could really help music reach bigger audiences. And inside there, you could, you know, get followers, and it had a messaging tool that felt a little bit more like email compared to how messaging stuff works now. And people built giant lists in there and fan connections, and they were using that instead of a website. We spent hours and hours and hours learning code hacks to make the page look like we want it to look like.
Oh, yeah.
And then one day it just all went away, and people were devastated because they had no way to reach those fans anymore. They had no contact information. They had nothing. And it was a prime example of, you do not own that relationship if your fan relationship is purely over social media. So we've got some redeeming points below how to overcome these negatives. But ultimately, to me, it's like, you've got to keep in mind what I was saying, that end goal. What are you trying to accomplish? Because if it's just to be entertaining online, that's one thing. That's great. Go have at it. But if you're trying to build a music career, you really need to be strategic about, one, how you use your time, how you protect your time, and make sure you're focusing on building yourself up as a creative artist and your craft and releasing music. And then, you know, understanding that you can use these tools to build an audience, but you got to get those audience members to a place where you own that relationship. Otherwise, one day you could wake up and it all goes away.
Yeah, well, so we'll get into some of the positive usages of social, but I think it's worth just saying plainly that you still need it mostly for discoverability. Unless you're touring all the time and you have massive word of mouth, like your shows are so impressive that every friend goes and brings another friend back the next time, you're going to need social in order to reach new people. So if that's true, then here's some ways I think you can use it in a healthy, smart way. One is to use a scheduling tool so you can reduce the frequency of you just being online by setting aside one day a week or an hour a week, say on Tuesday this will post and on Thursday this will post. And then part of that also involves having a calendar for the creation of content and the deployment of content so that you don't feel the pressure to be on the wheel every day trying to just dream up what to post. You sort of think it in advance, and maybe it's only once a week or once every 2 weeks. Like, to me, I think that doesn't matter so much as it's on a calendar, you get it done, you schedule it in advance. And then if you do some smart boosting on these different platforms, you can reach the people you need to reach with this stuff without just having to be glued to your phone. There's a bunch of other things we can say, but
yeah, I think to those point, I think one thing that's has become very clear. And when I said I was on that panel with TikTok, and she was highlighting that at TikTok, you can post 150 videos in a month and TikTok doesn't care. It doesn't impact your profile. They see every video as an individual thing with individual opportunities. Other platforms, they have definitely moved away from that. So if you did the same thing on Instagram, no one would ever see your content. It would be completely hidden from everyone, just because they don't want people participating in that way. Same with Facebook. So that, I think, is to your benefit to then think, okay, it's not so important that I post every day. Like, I think for a lot of times, or for a long time, you know, all these music business talking heads and coaches that most have never been artists themselves, all were saying, you got to post every day. You got to be on there every day, all morning and night. And it's like, no, you don't, because the platforms are not showing your stuff to people when you are on there that much in some cases. Well, the other thing that's something to consider, that planning it out, spacing it out is okay. You're not losing out because you didn't post five times in a day.
Another thing that happens with me, when I make something, I'm like so excited about it, I just want to post it and I'm really impatient. Whereas if I stuck to the calendar, I could say, great, I just created something. My work is done for next Thursday or whatever. But unfortunately, I posted immediately because I'm excited. And then guess what? I still need something for Thursday. So I have to work twice as hard now and make more stuff. So to kind of not squander all your energy, create in advance, schedule it out, stick to the calendar. And then another sort of time protection thing is just time blocking your engagement time. So not so much posting, but if you get comments and likes and whatever, and it's time to write people back, set aside 15 minutes in the morning or, you know, a couple hours every week, whatever works for you, do that. And then once that time is done, put the phone away, put your computer away, protect your time.
Well, and I'm not a calendar person. Like I'm not someone that's gonna sit down and make a calendar, but if you were not a calendar person like me, what I do is I use folders. I'll have a bunch of things like, oh, this is stuff that'll work. I'll throw it in a folder and then I'll slowly just work my way through that folder of posting stuff. And you know, we've talked about the benefits of like not trying to, you know, give away the whole story all in one day, like spacing things out. That's how I manage it. I'll have a folder of content and I'll just go to that folder until I've used it up. And that's a way to kind of have that same idea of like, here are the good things that I'll spread out over time.
Yeah. It's like an arsenal. That's cool.
Yeah.
One other thing we've sort of alluded to in this episode is just using social as a part of a funnel. So, which is just kind of your plotted out journey that you want to lead people through from some phase where they are either just introduced to you or, you know, just getting to know your music down to them becoming a true fan and buying something or, you know, giving you their email. You can either create stuff on social specifically for various parts of that journey, or you could just stick to your calendar, post stuff over the long haul, and then say, hey, guess what? These two or three posts did really well organically. I'm going to make those my introductory advertisements in my funnel. And hey, amongst my existing audience, these ones tended to really get a lot of comments. So clearly those are engaging for conversation. I'll use those kind of more in the middle of my funnel. So I think that's another way to just get off the wheel. And then we say this a lot, but just pick a couple platforms, maybe three at the most. Like, you don't need to be everywhere. Focus. Learn that platform, stick to the ones that you're inspired by. And I recently just started using, I know it's been around forever, but recently started using the voice DM feature in Instagram. And I love it. It suddenly makes Instagram feel personal and one-to-one. So that's just my own little thing of like, once I like that feature, I'm like, oh yeah, I'll stick around on Instagram because I actually feel like I can have true relationships with my audience.
Yeah. Then, you know, also we've talked about it some, but centralizing your community around, communication methods where you own the audience, whether it's email, SMS, texting is another great way. Like if you have a tool that collects your fans', phone numbers, website, like using your website as a hub and continuing to draw people there, because then you can control what they see, what happens when they leave, and you can, you know, monetize them far better and monetize that effort compared to letting Facebook make all the money or the social platform make all the money. And yeah, there's some others popping up, but you've got Discord on the list. I've not been on Discord much, but I know that that's a big fan community space.
I've been loving it. I just started my own. I haven't like launched it. But just in terms of being on other Discord servers for community, like I find it to be, it's a bit like Twitter, but all around like a single topic or interest or something. And then instead of the whole world piling on, like can happen in Twitter, it's, you know, the 100 people or the 1,000 people that are part of that little community. So in fact, when I said at the beginning of the episode that my goal is to get people off of all these various platforms into one place, I'm actually thinking of Discord as being that place that could be my kind of community hub.
Yeah. You know what? I think I finally put a pin on what has been driving me crazy lately, where all this comes from. This is my hot take, is that social media has its benefits for artists, but it also has this negative giant skeleton in the closet that a lot of people don't want to talk about. And that as artists, I feel like we've allowed it to shape us into something that we're not, when we should really just be focused on being our authentic self. The authentic artist, it's like, oh, well, if I'm not good on TikTok, then I must not be valuable. I must not have value as a musician. I must not make good art. And it's like, no, that's exactly the problem here. You should pursue your music career the way you want to, the way that feels authentic to you, that feels like a passionate expression of who you are, and not just trying to game a platform for likes and retweets or follows, because that is an empty road to go down. Where as an artist and the artist community, what is fulfilling for us is to creating something and releasing it into the world and seeing positive change, or being able to see people moved by what we do, or just being able to know that I created that and it's out there for people to enjoy. And that's what's amazing about being an artist. Being on TikTok is not what's amazing about being an artist.
Well, speaking of authenticity, it's like maybe the reason you're not good on TikTok is because you're not being yourself. You think you have to be a comedian or whatever is trending because of the algorithms, when maybe you're not funny, but maybe you're really interesting because you know a lot about neuroscience or so. I don't know, like whatever is true to you. Maybe you're the world's best baker of chocolate chip cookies. I don't know, but show the world what you're fascinated by, and I bet you'll do better on TikTok and you'll have more enjoyment. And at the very least, you'll just be showing who you are, so you're more likely to find your true fans.
Yeah, I think social media works for artists when it feels like an extension of who you are. And that might take a lot of, introspective looking at who you are, what works, what you like to do, what people could be along for the ride for. If you're somebody that just likes to tweak on gear all night long, it's like, well, how that could be interesting. You don't have to have multiple costumes and doing a song and dance and spending hours and hours rehearsing the timing on random audio clips so you can do whatever with these random audio clips I see all over TikTok. I'm like, I don't know why people spend time doing that. But anyway, that's what to me it's like. Find a way for it to be an extension of your authentic musical expression, because at the end of the day, that's what's important. That's why you got into music. If it's just about fame and celebrity, that's a whole different thing. This podcast would look different.
There's a lot dumber ways to become famous than making music too. So
a lot easier ways.
A lot easier, yeah. I had a concluding statement, yeah, unless you had anything.
Go for it. No, I think we're done.
And this is something I actually wanted to say somewhat succinctly, so I wrote it down. I'm going to read it. Conclusion. Strategic social media real estate is essential for a music career, but the idea that you need to post there in a frenetic way is over. Social should be a component of your funnel with smart storytelling. Don't be a constant content factory. Live your life. Make music.
Amen. We'll have the ushers pass the plate now.
Hallelujah.
Yes. So there we have it. We just had to get that off our chest. I got to go check my Instagram feed now.
I forgot to post that we're recording the podcast.
I know, man.
Proving that we exist.
This whole thing's been a lie. How do I know I'm not just in the Matrix? After all that, we would love to hear your thoughts. Is social media dead? Is it thriving for you? Are you feeling like, man, I'm glad you guys said that because I've been feeling the same way? Or you guys are off your rocker. What's your problem? You can weigh in at 360-524-2209. That's our listener line. Call it. It lets you talk for about 3 minutes. Try to keep it less than that, but give us your thoughts. We'll put it on the show. Or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And Chris, unless
I just wanted to say, if anyone is feeling like they need to prove that they've listened this long into the episode on social, you should take a selfie of yourself listening or watching this YouTube video at this exact moment, and then put it in your stories and tag CD Baby, and then we'll all have engagement that doesn't mean much, but will be fun.
And tag Chris and I. I'm at K Bruner. Chris is at Chris Robley. If you're watching the video, it's on the screen. And yeah.
What hypocrisy. How dare we ask for empty engagement?
This might have just been the last episode of the podcast. All right. Well, we do have a couple calls. So we should get into those. So let's hit it.
Hi, my name is Brock Dittus out of Salem, Oregon. I'm a solo artist, kind of as a hobby, but you can find me on all the major streaming services. I've been working on collaborations, or as the kids would say, collabos, with different people, different artists, musicians I know, and I'm curious if someone doesn't already have a presence on streaming and I want to credit them as a co-artist or a collaborator or just as a featured artist, is that possible? Do I have to go back and change it later? How is that done? So anyways, thanks. If you want to check out the music, it's BrockDittus. Thanks.
All right, that was a good question. We've had lots of questions about collaboration and how to attribute artists, but this was an interesting one because he's saying he's collaborating with people. He doesn't have music out there on his own yet. So how does that work?
So that went by quick. Is he talking about sharing credit on digital streaming platforms or just on social?
I think he was talking about digital platforms. That was my assumption. So, for example, say similar to, say, like that collaboration you did with Date Night. Say you hadn't released anything before, but you were friends with Mike. You played him some songs. He's like, hey, I'd love for you to write some stuff. We can collaborate. And the track gets released, Date Night and Chris Robley, but you don't have any presence on social media. I mean, not on social media, on streaming platforms.
On streaming. I mean, I think I would still definitely want to be accredited as another primary artist or whatever's appropriate for the collaboration. And even if that's like your introduction, it's music you made. And if the music does well, the success of that song can help feed back into whatever you're doing on your own once you put that stuff out. So I would say just make an artist name, have them credit you correctly or vice versa.
And I would also encourage him to just go release a track, even if it's a throwaway track, just so you can establish that presence. But I'm pretty sure that if they distribute it that way, it will create that artist profile for you on Spotify, and that track that you collaborated on will be the only one that's there.
Yeah.
So that's what's going to happen. And so then when you release a track, assuming you don't have a super common name as well, if you have a unique name and it doesn't try to attach it to someone else's profile, then when you release a track, it should just go dump it into that profile. But you can also get that profile ID and ensure that it goes into the right place. So they will create that artist identity for you because you are seen as an artist on that track. But go get a track out right away, even if it's just something throwaway or a quick cover, just to claim that and make sure that it's going to the right place and you have control over it. All right. Thanks for the call. We've got one more. Let's get to it.
Hey there. This is Mark Gunn, and I was listening to your e-commerce episode. And Kevin, you were saying that you found a cheaper method to ship CDs. It sounds like, if I was to guess, you were going to send them media mail, and you'd use the slimline CDs, and you can send them at a media mail rate cheaper than you normally can. Big warning, though, I found out the hard way, is apparently media mail, they go into a machine that basically sort of bends the CD, and sometimes, far too often, frequently, breaks the CD. So media mail is not the best route. It is the cheapest route, but it might not get your CD where you want it to go. It is better using something like stamps.com. and using the higher rate, but not as high as you just mailed it, using the post office regular rate. So just a quick suggestion, find me at tiltfather.net. Sláinte.
Thanks for that call, Mark. Yes, Mark is correct that if you use media mail, the thing that you can do with the what are they called? What kind of CDs were we just talking about?
I got
DigiPack from Eco Wallet. I had DigiPack in my head, and I'm like, it's not DigiPack. The Eco Wallets or just the wallets, they're thin. And what I found that has worked better, Mark, is I experienced the same thing when I did the free plus shipping stuff. I was just using normal envelopes. And at the post office, they will have this little measuring thing to see if it can go in the slot, if it's too big or not. And because it does go through a machine, I found that with just the regular envelopes, I did get a couple of CDs that broke. However, I have been using, went on Amazon and bought some colorful stuff, you know, built-in bubble wrap in the envelope. And those I haven't had any problems with. I haven't had anybody have one break. And they're still thin enough that you can get the cheaper rate. Now, if you're going to mail more, which I should have had this set up before. I didn't realize how many CDs we were going to sell from our website when our latest album came out in the fall. Banzoogle has an integration with EasyPost, and that allows you to get cheaper postage and have some options like Mark's talking about. Also, Stamps.com does the same thing, but EasyPost is integrated into your Banzoogle website. I've started setting it up. I need to get it done. It's one of those things where I'm like, I just got 5 orders this week, and the next week I have 5 more. I'm like, I just got 5 orders. So I'm like, I should have set this up. It would have been easier. That's why they call it Easy Post.
And then a month goes by and you're like, oh, I have 25 orders I haven't shipped.
Is that what happened to you?
Well, not that many, but yeah, I'm really bad about that. I need to use one of those services where I can just print it all from home. But one thing is Media Mail the one that costs like $2.66 in the US?
I have been able to get it down to 90 cents for one CD, but that was with that envelope that was had no padding in it.
Okay,
and I was just rolling the dice.
That's what I did. I would do Eco Wallet inside of an envelope with like less than a dollar's worth of stamps even. And I've never had anyone since I started doing that return any, you know, say that anything was broken. So maybe I've just
I had a couple, but with the padded envelope, I just went on Amazon and bought a bulk pack of these padded envelopes. I think it was I don't know. It might have been $10, but then with that padded envelope, it was $1.30 something was the cheapest I could get it, and had no problems. The only thing with media mail, this is one thing that can happen, and it happened to our mega fan of all people. Like he is this. Even our other fans know that this person is like our number one fan. He's promoting us on Facebook and starting conversations all the time, which is great. We love him. But I sent it media mail to him, and it took 2 months to get to him. I was like, of all people, to take
that's what
that
you
long.
Get for loving us more than anyone else.
But I actually sent him a second one when he said it hadn't arrived after a month, and I put a bunch of extra freebies in it, and then he got the other one like a month later. The original one, it finally showed up. So you can have that happen with media mail. Usually it doesn't. I just picture that it's like the package that falls in the between the seats and the postal truck, and
they'll find it in 100
years.
When
they do the quarterly cleaning, oh, here's all these packages that fell in the between the seats. So anyway, well, again, thanks for those calls. If you want to call our listener line, I'll throw it out there again, 360-524-2209, or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And we definitely want to hear what people have to say about all this social media stuff. It's been an interesting couple of years where a lot of things have happened in the world, happened to us, happened around us. And social media has definitely played a role in a lot of it, and for good or bad.
We're tired. Right.
We're tired.
That's how to conclude this episode. We're tired. Social media has made us tired.
It's made us tired. Our brains are spinning constantly. We don't know what to think. We don't know who we are.
We have to fight each other.
Yeah. I mean, what else are you going to do?
Go outside.
Write a song.
That too. Make music.
All right. Well, Chris, I think that's going to bring us to the end of this episode.
All right. Next week. Oh, we don't know what our, we're going to talk on NFTs next week, aren't we?
Yeah, we've got an episode about NFTs coming up. You've probably seen it, you know, in our predictions of 2022. We said my prediction was by the end of January, you will have heard the word term NFT a million times. And that prediction is coming true.
It is.
So we're going to break it down for independent artists, help them understand, what is this? Should I care? Is it going to be important in the future? And that should be a good discussion. I look forward to it. I know Chris is so excited.
I may or may not be launching my first NFT in advance of that discussion.
I look forward to to seeing that happen. Does that mean I have to buy it?
You know, that's up to you. I can't force you to.
Okay. Okay. All right. Yeah. Looking forward to that. Don't forget to hit that subscribe button, and more episodes on the way. Lots of episodes you probably need to catch up on, so go check those out as well. And we'll catch you next time.
See you then. See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.